What's up, ballers? How's everyone doing? Welcome to the All Drive No Drop podcast, episode number 12. It's a solo pod today. David is out gallivanting around the world, having a good time. But I'm going to bring to you, it's going to be a shorter podcast, but I have some spicy topics to bring up that I think you're going to like. So stick around. We're going to get into this. You know, smash that subscribe if you haven't. Go check out us on Spotify as well and all of your other podcasting platforms where you get your podcasts. But let's just get into this now. Been a little bit under the weather. Yes, it's true. But I'm rising strong. I'm getting back into it. Been watching the PPA finals over the weekend. Not finished the finals. I'm recording on Sunday before the finals are over. But I have some things I want to talk about with the format. So if you're not aware of how the format works, they basically, for like men's, women's, and mixed doubles, the top-ranked player gets to pick their partner. So you have, you know, the pool of players that made the finals based on points for the year. So the top players, say, in men's was Colin Johns. He picked his brother. And then, obviously, that removes Ben from the pool, and you go down until everyone's picked. I feel like this format is a lot better suited for like an all-star format. I like the format. I think it's fun. I think it's very cool. But I don't like it for a final. Say you're like crowning a champion for the year. I think doing this draft type of scenario doesn't make sense for doing a finals. Why can't you let the players pick their partners? You know, who they would normally play with, which some of the players did. Once you get towards the bottom of the players, you know, towards that bottom of the top 10, they didn't get to play with, you know, most of the people who they wanted. I think that is a better midseason format, and you do an actual finals, crown a champion, because the PPA right now just doesn't feel like any tournament is significant. It feels like every tournament is the same thing. You ask people who's, you know, they'll tune in, but no one knows what's on the line. I don't even know what's on the line for the finals, and a ton of people dropped out, so there must have not been a lot on the line. Another problem, you know, with the contracts, some people just aren't motivated every tournament. It's just more of a job. Obviously, you know, it's a job for everyone. But, like, when you have something on the line, they're going to play harder. The play is going to be better. That's just how I feel about that. Let me know how you feel about that, if you'd like a different format or you like the format. I mean, I do like the format. Don't get me wrong. So I really do enjoy the format. I just think for the finals, I want them to pick their own team. Now, line calls. In the tournament, there was a few times, but there's one kind of like egregious one today, and she is known for making some terrible line calls, especially when things get tight, and things don't get tight for her often. So, you know, it happens every once in a while. But Annalee Waters makes some awful, awful line calls, and today she made a line call when the other team didn't have any timeouts, so they weren't allowed to challenge. Something's got to be done, especially when you're playing in a finals. Why are the players allowed to make the calls? And if you are going to let the players make the calls, at least have someone, like, I think the what the NFL does with the replay assist is really good. You know, if the refs get the call wrong on the field, someone's watching the game, and they can come and say, like, oh, you messed this call, we're going to reverse it. What if you're going to let the players make the calls, at least have someone using that ball AI tracker and overrule the call. Like, it, I just don't get it. You know, having so much stake in a final, so I guess I don't even know what the stake is, but I just think you got to fix the line calls. At least if the refs are making it, hopefully they're unbiased, but you allow the players to make it, it gets tight, it gets in, you know, a final championship match. It's just not, you're not going to get good line calls that way. Everyone's going to favor themselves most likely. Now, Federico Strackstrud, he's always getting into some kind of predicament, right? So the scenario arose when he was playing singles and he got called for a penalty because of ball abuse. It looked like he stopped the ball with his foot. It didn't look like he smashed the ball. The ball seemed like he hit the ball back, and it was fine. So he got called ball abuse. I think what they do, they gave a point to his opponent. I don't know if that was his first technical or second. And then, you know, he challenged to the head ref. But I just don't understand. You know, like he stops the ball with his foot. The ball was bouncing fine. How are you going to call a penalty on that? And then also, I think this was what I was talking about last time, is Federico was involved in a challenge that took forever and it stopped the game. I just stopped watching at this point because the pause is like 5, it goes 10 minutes. It kills just any interest I have in watching. Usually when Federico's on the court, he just always slows the game down with the challenges. They take forever. He always argued, he's already arguing, then he wants to appeal, and he wants to appeal. They got to do something about this. You can't stop the game that long. And we're just talking about either he stopped the ball with his foot or, you know, whatever. And it's just like, and he always does terribly after, too. So it's like he's not even doing himself favors. So what's my suggestion? Move this stuff along. Whatever the ref says, that's what goes. If you want to have an appeal later, after the game's done, maybe, you know, like the ref gets penalized or something for making the wrong call, or you can't even do that. The ref's going to make a wrong call once in a while, but like maybe they start accumulating points. I don't know. Just can't have the stoppages all that often, especially when you're putting on your final tournament. It just, I think you lose viewers. Let's move on to what the pickle with this ripple. What is going on with the Rhombus Ripple? I know. Last time, I told you the Elantra was going to be December 6th. And at this point, it's just a joke. I mean, it's always launching next month, right? So I did some digging. I wanted to get to the bottom of this. What's going on? I talked to the owner of Rhombus, Dong. Very nice guy. And, you know, definitely feel bad for him because he's put in a situation where he isn't getting the communication from USAP. Basically, this is what's going on. And then I'm going to make some speculation on some other stuff, but here's the facts. He is in communication with USAP. Well, let me backtrack. The Rhombus Ripple, which is now, I guess, we'll call the beta, which had the raised ridges in the face. I got a ripple up here. This is not the beta, but the original Rhombus Ripple had raised carbon fiber strips go basically in it. The new one, you can feel it a little bit, but it doesn't, like, it's not visible really, like protruding like the beta. That one was approved by USAP. People were complaining at tournaments. They went and said you can't use these, blah 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 blah. Never officially delisted it or banned it from USAP. Just at some tournaments they said they weren't allowed to use them. So kind of up in the air if you can even use those betas in tournaments, right? Now, the new model, which basically had reinforced edge guards because the problem with the beta was the foam was coming out of the edge guard and the edge guard was separating, has not been tested by USAP yet. So that new one has not been tested, and he's been asking them if it needs to be tested in order to get fully approved. Or are his changes not necessary to get tested? So I know there's been a lot of speculation. It has not been tested. That's the word on that from Dong at Rhombus. The new one has not been tested. And every time he asks USAP, they say, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. And he's probably been asking them every day. They're not giving him a definitive answer. And that has made him delay the launch because he doesn't want to ship out all these paddles and then have it not be approved. Now, he has done more hit testing. So he has like a machine where he's hit the button, can simulate like 10,000 hits. He's simulated a ton of hits on this and it has not been breaking. Mine haven't broke. I haven't heard of anyone else's new models breaking. So it seems like his fix has at least stopped the quality control issues. So I'm pretty confident in that right now. Obviously, we'll see as more people get them, more time goes by. But so far, so good. Now, what is the new PB core number? Because they didn't give him the PB core number testing. They just said it's below 0.43. He went and got it tested independently, and it tested at 0.42 for the new production model. But he wants to make sure that USAP is going to test it, right? So what are we left with? He doesn't really have any options but to get an answer from USAP before he moves forward. And I think that's the right way to go. Like, you don't want to go sell this and then have to recall it all, especially for a small company. You just can't afford to do that. Now, the good news, so that, let me just summarize the new production model. Very little break-in period. I feel like mine has, it's like just very slight. So with this new production process, it seems like the paddle is what you get. If not, like, it gets a little tiny bit hotter, but it really stays the same. Whereas the old beta model was only getting hotter because of that edge guard issue. Also, a note, the old 16 millimeter ripple, if you're familiar with that, tested at 0.46 for the PB core number. And that's kind of why it got delisted. Things started to get tested around that time, and that one was too hot. So, also, I think that this is all speculation on my part. This is nothing to do with what anyone said. I think if this got tested and it came in too hot, they could reduce the amount of foam in there, I think the foam is the main thing that's driving the power on this paddle, not the carbon ridges. I think that's more of like a, you know, structural design, but maybe it is. They can reduce the amount of foam. They can reduce the carbon fiber core too, because they already did that. If they reduce that, it's going to make the paddle a little less powerful. So I think even if they came back, tested it, said it was too hot, they could reduce it and they still get this out. Now, where does that leave us, and why is USAP just not testing it or not giving him approval? I think it's because of I got to be careful with my words. All right, I'm just going to say it. I think USAP is trying to walk back what they've said already. I think they heard too many complaints about the ripple. Not that they haven't heard a lot of complaints about other stuff, but I think they're scared that their number is too high and the ripple passes their test, but I think they think they made a mistake with their number and they're trying to figure out a way they can walk back what they said, because, you know, they made such a big deal. They put so much time into this and they're trying to figure out how they can stop the ripple from being legal. And maybe they'll just keep delaying. That's what I'm thinking they're doing and why they're being so hard right now on Rhombus. We'll see what happens. That's just my thoughts. I don't know if we'll get an answer this year. I think they're going to kick the can down the road and wait till next year, which would really be unfortunate for Rhombus and everyone that wants to play with the ripples. But that's all I have on that. I think that you know, we'll hopefully get an answer soon, but there's no launch that's coming, you know, in the near future. No date's been set. Now, let's talk about some paddles I hit this week. We'll talk about the Honolulu C2 and the J2KC. I think these are going to be priced at $100. Maybe they'll go down to $90 with a discount code. I'm not sure. They're not available for sale yet, but I think these are going to be very popular. They're basically the same shape, J2K. What they are is they're Gen 1.5. They're unibody with perimeter edge foam. They just aren't thermoform. These paddles in the 115 swing weight on each of them and almost a 7 twist weight. I think it's 6.9598 on their respective paddles. Super stable paddles. I played both of these stock the whole time with the J2K 16 millimeter. I just wanted to get a feel for them. These are actually way better than the Prism Flash, in my opinion. Unless you're like, the handle length's really an issue for you. But these not being thermoformed, still got pretty good power. J2KC is getting more pop than the C2. Basically, these are both the same shape. The J2 name's already taken. I think that's why they just didn't call it a J2. This is super soft, not too much pop, very controllable, but with still pretty good power. And then the J2KC retains that same Kevlar from the J2K, has pretty good pop, still pretty good power. And honestly, like, if you gave this to someone you might think like it's a thermoform, because I mean it's still it'd be a softer, less powerful thermoform, but pretty good power for a Gen 1.5 paddle, and probably will be my preferred hybrid Gen 1.5 now. Was really impressed with the control, the sweet spot, everything about the paddle. So if those are going for like $90 to $100, great, great stuff if you're looking for that. So I'll talk more about those, and I'll probably do a review when we get more information on that. Okay, so I wanted to talk about the Icon Infinity Max from Diadem. They are also doing all of their, like the 18K Pro and another 18. So they're doing their 18K Pro in a wide body as well, and then their non-thermal formed version of the 18K. But I wanted to try this Icon Infinity Max because I was interested to see how it played in the wide body, and they're doing an interesting take on the wide body. They're doing it at 15.67 inches, so super, super short, right? Maybe the shortest paddle I've played with. 5-inch handle, 8.19 inches, we'll call it 8.2 inches wide. I played with the elongated version of this. This has a lot more pop and power than that version, and I'm not sure if maybe I got a dud on the elongated or they changed construction in this, but this was a lot of fun to play with, and I played very well with it. It just... you know, is a little shorter than your average wide body, which, you know, for some people might be good, and when you get adjusted to it, might be okay. But this was really fun to play with. I don't know why it's so different than the elongated, to be honest. But I think this goes on sale December 12th, I'm going to say. One second. I got the tool here to show everyone, because I don't think anyone's shown this yet, so I figured I'd just show it. Basically, you have this like metal thing, and then this, so the edge guard, or what they, not, I guess this is an edgeless paddle, and this is called edge guard protection or side protection, whatever. Basically, you use this tool and you take out these little plugs, I guess you call them. So you take out the plug, and then you can put on different colors. Right now, this one only comes with, I think this is a mint green. And you can do, it comes with three. So basically you could do like one here, one on the side if you wanted to do two of the mint green, one of the black. Pretty easy to do. The switch does take some time, so it's not something you'd be like doing every game, obviously, but when you're at home, obviously you just can't lose this tool. You could use like a flathead screwdriver probably to pull it out, but just keep that in mind. I think that's really cool, and then also it adds weight. I think each of these is about 3 grams. So add some weight. Maybe they can make it in like a thicker plastic if you wanted to add like different weights available. This stock, this can be played stock no problem. With this shape, the only thing you'd want to do to make it better, I guess, is you would add weight for power, but this actually has really good stock power, really good stock pop. It's impressed me way more than I thought it would, and just because the elongated version was just, you know, it was okay, it was good. So if you're looking for a super maneuverable wide body paddle with a short handle, which I know some people are looking for that, I was still able to hit two-handed backhands with a 5-inch handle. If your hands are bigger, then you probably won't be able to, but I'm still fine with it. I can jam my hands. You can put your hand on the bottom of this paddle head. Yeah, my flicks with this, I think flicks with this are really, really easy just because of how maneuverable it is. And yeah, having great rolls with it too. I got great spin. It does have the paint grit, but you know, with the edgeless paddles, most of them have paint grit. That's just what it comes with. But yeah, check this out. Comes out December 12th, I believe. I think it's going to be around $200. They have been having sales all month, so their Infinity Max has been like, well, their Infinities have been $160. So check that out. I'll put a link in the description if you are interested in that. And then next, I'm going to talk about the Flick paddles from Body Helix. Basically, if you don't know what that is, Body Helix is doing a program where they're making paddles that aren't USAP approved on purpose. They're doing Flick approved, which is just, you know, their own stamp. And these paddles are going to be, you know, not following USAP rules. They're just giving people an option to have them. I tried the Flick 16 millimeter. I think they call this their Gen 3. Forgot the name. But, you know, this one was fine. I didn't think it had, you know, like anything crazy about it. But overall, very stable, decent power, not too poppy paddle stock. So it was good. And then I haven't tried the super size. So they made a 14 millimeter that is 17 inches long, 8 inches wide. So out of the spec range for the total length and height combined. I'll have to give this one a try. But they also made this super gritty. So they made the dimensions a little bigger. And I'm assuming the surface roughness is a little above the legal limit too. So if you're looking to have fun or you just play rec only, I think that the Flick program could be interesting. But we'll play those more and we'll try to, you know, see what's up. Now, coming up, the paddles that I'm excited about that are coming up, and I will have my best paddles of 2024 video coming up here soon. Hopefully next week or, you know, within the next 2 weeks for sure. Carbon True Foam, it sounds like that's going to happen in January. I don't know if it's been officially approved or if they have the PB Core testing numbers. I've asked, and hopefully you'll be getting that next week. And then the 11.6/24 power paddles, I'm hoping to get those next week and start trying those out. Those look like a lot of fun. And I hope to, you know, bring all those on the court. And then might have something coming from Proton. So some exciting things coming up as well as stuff going on right now. That's all I have. Just making it, you know, straight to the point this week. We will have David back next week. Just make sure you subscribe. And if you listen to on Spotify, please rate the show. That helps us get the show to more people. Help support us as well. Really do appreciate it, and thank you so much for listening. Drop it in the comments if you have any questions or have any topics you want addressed for the next pod. Everyone, have a great week. Go play some pickleball. Thank you very much.